You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll set a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material in the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, to the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, right here on RadioAryan.com. Each week, the Roper Report brings you news and political commentary, which you will not find anywhere else, except for the daily updates on the Roper Report website, which you can now get to very quickly and cleanly through whitenationalists.com. That's a plural. WHITENATIONALISTS.com, whitenationalist.com, for the Roper Report's daily updated news and political blog. This week's The Roper Report podcast is chock full of hatred for others and love for our own, because we believe that cold, rational logic will not win the day. We have to have some passion and some emotion behind it to make it real. Obviously, we cannot love our families if we do not equally hate anything that threatened our family's survival and safety and well-being. Our race is our extended family. We could not love our race if we do not also hate with a furious, righteous indignation and hatred anything which threatened the continued survival of our extended family, our race. So I am a racist and I am a hater. I do not shirk away from those labels, those supposed pejoratives. Feel free, have at it. If that's the worst you can do, sticks and stones. But I will back up everything that I say with truth and proof. This is not fake news. This is the Roper Report. This last week in Fort Lauderdale, in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma, we got an opportunity to see one more time looting by the lower primates, who were apparently really helpful in saving a whole shoe store full of Nikes, as well as some large home electronics, which otherwise might have tragically been lost to drowning in the flooding. Some of them were arrested, and some of them knew how to avoid being arrested and are enjoying their home electronics and their new Nikes. But the video that was broadcast nationwide, not so much through the mainstream media, even though they were there filming it, but through private social media broadcast through YouTube, was very educational and informative once again. We don't see a lot of white people out looting and pillaging in the aftermath of natural disasters, do we? We see lower primates acting like typical silverbacks and stealing anything that's not nailed down. This happened not just in Fort Lauderdale, but throughout the Florida Keys, as well as Miami and even the ritzy Palm Beach area. It's also happened in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey in Texas, where some drowning victims were floating around in their flooded homes while those homes were being ransacked by looters. And some of the looters even opened fire at rescue personnel, a bunch of white guys in boats trying to save people from being drowned, and they were getting shot at by looters who were trying to steal their boats. Well, we've seen this all before. We know that it's just TNB, typical nigger behavior. Once again, the world had an opportunity to see what happens when the lights go out. This kind of segues into St. Louis. Those of you who may be aware of the fact that in St. Louis this last week, there was a verdict handed down by a judge who found a white police officer innocent of the shooting death of a black motorist. Now, who is a black motorist? Well, he's a guy who sold heroin and had a gun in his car and led police on a high-speed chase, and then when they pulled him over, he tried to run over them, so he got shot. You know, in other words, he was a good boy who did do nothing, right? So this other good boy who did do nothing, this guy who was probably going to be a Rhodes Scholar and get his life together and become a brain surgeon and a nigger astronaut, both, was tragically cut down in the prime of his life by a white police officer and went to trial. The white police officer asked for a judge rather than a jury trial because he knew that he would be literally hung out to dry if he had a jury trial in majority non-white St. Louis. Remember Ferguson? Ferguson is a suburb of St. Louis. That should give you a taste. The whole side of the river called East St. Louis is third world. Now, it wasn't always that way. St. Louis still has some beautiful architecture, and the ring around Western St. Louis is predominantly white communities that have engaged in white flight, but still make a three-hour commute in every day to keep the city running. But the city itself has shrunk due to black primate behavior. In 1950, the St. Louis population was about 800,000. Today, it's about 320,000. That shows you what the effect of white flight has been on the city of St. Louis. I still did depict St. Louis as becoming the future capital of the white ethnostate I called New America in both my Haste in the Day trilogy as well as in the Bulk. In the Haste in the Day trilogy, I explained that its central geographic location, its nexus, there is a huge river port, and the fact that as a relatively large city that's strategically important, it can be easily surrounded, besieged, and ethnically cleansed would all lead to it being a good choice for a future administrative and governmental capital for the white ethnostate of New America. And that's very well a possibility still. But for this weekend, it wasn't a place for white people to be tromping around. Now, even the communist and the anarchist and the homosexuals who were really signaling their virtue by marching with the nignogs knew better than to stay with them after dark. They quickly left. And then the niggers surrounded the mayor's house and started throwing rocks through her windows. Now, that's really educational because it shows to the establishment elites that when the lights go out and stay out, they don't come back on, they're going to get eaten by the very pets that they've been feeding. That's very reassuring for us while we can watch the show. Now, I saw the show on YouTube and several different live feeds, and a lot of people who watched what I watched, with several officers being wounded, being injured, and a lot of arrests being made, and a lot of people being pepper sprayed and maced, and some violent reactions. A couple of journalists from the Fox affiliate there in St. Louis got beaten up for being the wrong color in the wrong part of town during the riots. But for the most part, no one died. And it was not as interesting or as potentially violent a couple of nights of riots as it may have been. And a lot of people were wondering why, and some people were thinking that perhaps it's because they weren't funded well enough. I think it's because the city was prepared. Walmart actually violated people's Second Amendment rights by removing all the ammunition from their store shelves, thereby putting white people who might need to defend themselves at risk. And many stores boarded up their windows. You would think that a hurricane was coming into St. Louis by the way the downtown looked. But the city was prepared because as soon as the trial started, they knew. They know how these niggers are. These same niggers riot and loot and protest and march. If their basketball or their football team wins, and they riot and protest and loot if their favorite nigger ball team loses. It doesn't matter. Any possible excuse to riot and loot and pillage, they will. So I have to disagree with some of my colleagues who say that the Jews, like Soros, who've been funding these black protests and riots against Whitey, are now recognizing their error and are repenting from that mistake and no longer funding these protests because the backlash against them by whites, at least psychologically, has grown too clear and too obvious, that white people are seeing these riots and no longer feeling guilt, but rather feeling anger in response. I'm not saying that the NAACP and maybe George Shortz, Soros, or other people don't fund these protests and rallies. I know they do. They bring in niggers from out of town, and they provide them with motel rooms and with a bucket of fried chicken and tell them to have at it and raise hell. I've seen it happen, really. I know it's true. But I don't think it's necessarily the case that they're going to stop funding them because they're afraid of whites reacting. I think that niggers will be niggers, regardless of whether they're being paid to or not. It does maybe facilitate things to bust them in and give them a bucket of fried chicken and maybe a 40 or two and some blunts and tell them to have at it, but they're still going to do it. And if you don't understand that that's just typical nigger behavior, TNB, whenever the lights go out, whenever there's nobody looking, you got to understand what they did during the riot in St. Louis. The cops in St. Louis, black and white, were accused of basically baiting a trap. They were accused of baiting that trap by leaving a unmarked police car down a side street that the niggers then tore up and trashed. And then the communists who were organizing the niggers and shutting them from one alley to another accused the cops of purposefully leaving the police car there because they knew that the blacks would attack it and then they could respond by arresting them. Well, if they're that stupid, then maybe so. And maybe the cops did bait that trap in that alley. I don't know for sure. But I can tell you one thing. They don't have to be bussed in, or bought 40s, or provided with motel rooms, or even given much direction or instruction. People need to understand that they are just beast of the field by nature. They are primitive savages. And they don't have to be bribed or cajoled into acting like primitive savages. They're just reverting back to their nature. Their instincts are to be violent and to loot and pillage and riot. No one has to pay them to do so. It's not much of a stretch. They're not taking acting classes to act the way they do. They're just being niggers. So niggers will be niggers, and they don't have to have anybody pay them or to have a grand conspiracy involved for them to be niggers. So I do think they will continue to be niggers as long as they are niggers. And so the riots, the protests, the lootings will be an ongoing aspect and facet of American life until balkanization happens and they're put in their place, whether that is a separate nation or under 6 feet of grass. We could just accept that that is going to be the ongoing reality. Niggers will be niggers as long as there are niggers. And as long as there are niggers next to white people will inevitably be the victims of those niggers. Make sense? So you don't have to overthink this. You don't have to find some kind of grand conspiracy. They're just being niggers, folks. And they were niggers down in Houston when they were looting and shooting at rescuers. They were niggers down in Florida in the aftermath of Irma last week when they were stealing home electronics and breaking into shoe stores. And they were niggers in St. Louis when this heroin-dealing, attempted cop-killing thug, this waste of breath, finally became a good nigger, and the white cop, for once, didn't get hung out to dry. Now, he lost his job. He can never be a cop again, but at least he's not spending his life in prison like they wanted to send him off for. And the reaction was predictable and predicted, and they knew, perhaps better than some of my colleagues, that niggers are just niggers. Now, this last week, two Shieldwall Network members here in Arkansas had an opportunity to give an interview to a French television production team who asked them a couple of questions that would bear repeating so we could understand how the mainstream media in continental Europe thinks about us as white nationalists. They asked them whether or not the election of Donald Trump was responsible for the rise in white nationalism. And of course, we know that Trump's campaign allowed people to state more politically incorrect things openly, such as discussing immigration, than they might have otherwise. And the backlash against him by the liberals, the left, then created this chaotic re-backlash from the right and polarized America, divided America into our separate camps where everybody literally is moving away from the center to the fringes and becoming commies on one side and Nazis on the other, literally, with very little left in the middle, very little establishment elite foundation for moderates or for centrist left. That was in part kind of a result of Trump's campaign and his presidency, but it's a whole chicken and the egg question. It could be that the rise of the alt-right and white nationalism had a great deal to do with Trump's campaign and his victory, because as a consummate politician, you know, wetting his fingers, sticking up in the air to see which way the wind is blowing, he rode the wave of rising populism and nationalism, which was already sweeping the nation, as a response to 8 years of Obama, as a backlash against that anti-white administration. And as a consummate politician who didn't really believe in anything, just look at who his grandkids are, Trump rode the wave of populism and nationalism into the White House. So you could say that Trump's presidency is more an after effect of rising white nationalism rather than the reverse being true. And then the second question that they asked, these French producers who were interviewing my Showall Network members up in Harris, was whether or not what happened in Charlottesville was an indication that future protests and demonstrations and rallies by white nationalists would be violent. Now, obviously, anyone who knows what happened at Charlottesville, if you've seen the videos, if you read the accounts, you know that it was a defensive action, a permitted protest, and the violence came from the left. The violence came from Antifa. The violence came from Black Lives Matter, from the commies and the anarchists. Yes, our guys there defend themselves. They did a pretty darn good job of it. But they did not intend to go there with violence on their minds or in their hearts. They carried shields to defend themselves, right? And the one guy, yeah, he was, his car was being attacked, and he panicked and hit the accelerator and accidentally drove over some people. And I'm sure that the coming court case will bear out the fact that that mud shark, that tremendously, grossly, morbidly obese Heather Heyer, who wasn't even touched by the car, died of a heart attack of quote-unquote natural causes, not because she was ran over. And the rest were blocking a street and attacking motorists. So, yeah, I would have panicked and hit the accelerator too if I was the kid. But be that as it may, we did not ever bring violence to any protest that I led in White Revolution or in the National Alliance and now in the Shield Wall Network. We go prepared to defend ourselves and to prepare to defend our supporters and even the people in the towns that we go to if they're attacked by Antifa. We'll do whatever's necessary. By any means necessary, we will defend ourselves, but we don't come planning violence. It's always the left that starts the violence and us who actually finishes it every single time. But the French, of course, want to play this narrative off of the white nationalists being the violent neo-Nazis, and I say, so what? Run with it. Because we don't need to hand out lollipops and make our people like us because we're so sweet and gentle and innocent. We don't need to portray ourselves needlessly and unnecessarily and falsely as victims. We need to remind ourselves and to remind our enemies, most importantly, that we are not victims, we are victors, we are conquerors. And so if they want to think of us as being violent, then let them be intimidated, let them be afraid, let them be scared, like the Arkansas Antifa have been here in my state, where we played whack-a-mole with them to the point that they no longer even come out for protest against us, over and over again. They have punked out like little bitches they are, and I've called them out on this publicly, and all they do is block me from their social media because they know it's true. Because we have shown Arkansas Antifa that when you are ruthless, when you are not intimidated, when you've got nothing left to lose, and they know that you just as soon tie into them as look at them, they don't have the guts. They don't have the balls for it. They're too weak. So, here in Arkansas, we've been successful in crushing the Antifa because, as the police told us, the last time that we had demonstration against Antifa and they failed to show up, literally they are afraid of us. And that's the way they should be. So if the media in France or the media in the United States or the Antifa or Black Lives Matter or any of our other enemies want to think of us as being violent, then I say that's cool. Because the time is coming when we will be. And if they think they've seen violence so far, if they think that they have seen us upset and angry so far, there's an old song lyric from back in the 90s. Goes something like, 6 million lies cannot compare with what you're gonna get. You think you've seen a Holocaust, but you ain't seen nothing yet. And they have not seen us angry yet. They have not seen us violent yet. But they might as well go ahead and get intimidated and scared now because it's coming. It's definitely coming for them. So they ask if Charlottesville symbolized the new violent tract for white nationalism and ask them specifically whether or not Harrison in North Central Arkansas, the home of the Klan, is a draw for white supremacists to move there. And it may very well be the case that it often is, and they answer that question as well. Now, while they were doing that, I was actually clearing some land at the bottom of the property that we're buying so that we can have a winter camp out here. This property that we're buying will be a future location for meetings of the Shieldwall Network and our allies, and it needs some development. We've been cutting down some trees and some shrubs and clearing the pasture area. And I was doing that again today as well, working a chainsaw. But as I am doing this, they are giving the interview. And as they're giving the interview, then in the south part of the state, there was a meet and greet and barbecue being held that same weekend where five new people attended and became incorporated in the Shieldwall Network. So we've reached the point now. We've grown to the point now where the Shieldwall Network is able to not just be one guy or a couple of guys or a few small cadre members, but enough activist leaders working together here in the state and in surrounding states that we can hold multiple events simultaneously without being stretched thin, just like we did the last time we had a demonstration when we did three locations of three protests simultaneously, successfully. And that's the kind of thing the Shieldwall Network does. Political activism. Yesterday, my wife and I met with a new family, a couple and a small child, who are now going to become active in the Shieldwall Network. And we spent the day getting to know them, allowing them to get to know us as we vetted one another. And they're going to be attending next week's Shieldwall Network Central Arkansas Regional Meeting. That's next Saturday, September the 23rd at noon in Central Arkansas. And for details, if you're in Arkansas or the surrounding states and can make it in, I encourage you to email me, Billy Roper, at roper_billy@yahoo.com. Once again, that's Saturday, September 23rd at noon in Central Arkansas for the Shieldwall Network Arkansas Regional Meeting. For details, email roper_billy@yahoo.com. So while I was clearing the land here and our comrades up in Harrison were giving the interview to the French TV and our comrades down in Central Arkansas was having the bonfire and the book burning to celebrate the doxing of a Shieldwall Network affiliate after Charlottesville, and the new prospective affiliates were attending. One of them had a 16-person alt-right and white nationalist coalition here in Arkansas that we had not even been aware of before because they've primarily been active online, and now they recognize that it's time to get IRL, in real life, offline, and to meet other people in person. We've met a few of them already, and the remaining dozen or so of those 16 are going to be attending our next meeting, or the one after, October the 7th, which is the week after we get back from the Stormfront Conference coming up September the 29th, September the 30th, and October the 1st in Eastern Tennessee. Now, there's still some time left. If you'd like to register for the Stormfront Conference, I encourage you to email stormfront@bellsouth.net. That's stormfront@bellsouth.net to ask Mr. Don Black how you can register for the Smoky Mountain Summit, the Stormfront Conference coming up September the 29th through October the 1st in Eastern Tennessee. And you can come and meet myself, Billy Roper, and David Duke, and Don Black, and other white nationalist leaders, as well as several dozen white nationalist activists, and network and socialize with them, as well as hear seminars and speeches. There'll be white-pilling, encouraging, and activating. That's the important thing, to activate you, to get you off your ends and out from behind your keyboards and in real life working to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children locally at the grassroots level with friends that are also happening to be white nationalists.
Eyes shining bright with unspilled tears, thinking about all these wasted years. Everything worth living for is gone. Brother, I find it hard to keep fighting on. Falling down towards the abyss, the Reaper embraces me with his kiss. It makes me want to refuse to care, refuse to care, to watch this all unfold, too much to bear. The way it ends, if this is the way my race ends, if this is the way it ends, I can't bear to witness. If this is the way it ends, if this is the way my race ends, if this is the way it ends, I can't bear to witness. Disease encroaching on all I hold dear. Somehow I gotta get my soul out of here. Heart of agony, faint burning hope. I'm fighting it hard to try to cope. Because liars own the world with conquering poise, with conquering poise. In a wasteland of meaningless noise, we don't stand a chance with a dormant pride, with dormant pride. The heroes of our race have already died. The way it ends, if this is the way my race ends, if this is the way it ends, I can't bear to witness. If this is the way it ends, if this is the way my race ends, if this is the way it ends, I can't bear to witness. To imagine it all has come down to this. Apathy and suicidal bliss. It's all over except for the crying, with a whimper instead of the roar of a lion. The greatest race to ever walk the earth, walk the betrayed, our race betrayed. White man, fight the flight towards the grave. If this is the way it ends, if this is the way my race ends, if this is the way it ends, I can't bear to witness. If this is the way it ends, if this is the way my race ends, if this is the way it ends, I can't bear to witness. Will not be the way it ends. No, no, this won't be the way. This won't be the way. The way it ends.
Now, after the 9/23 meeting here in Central Arkansas, and the Stormfront Conference the weekend after in Eastern Tennessee, there's going to be the Showall Network meeting October the 7th for new prospects in Eastern Arkansas. So you still have time to get on board as we're beginning to take off, not just in Arkansas, but in the surrounding states as well. Next weekend, we're going to be meeting with people here in Arkansas and in Missouri. And then the weekend after, people from Kentucky and Tennessee and Ohio and Indiana and Virginia, who are starting Showall Network franchises in all those states and their local areas. We're going to meet and vet with those leaders and a few of their supporters and then help show them, person to person, how they can be people of influence in their community and to recruit new members and start their own Showall Network franchises in Virginia and Tennessee and Kentucky and Ohio and Indiana. That'll be 2 weeks from now. So we're very, very busy, but we're not too busy to bring you news and political commentary you will not hear anywhere else every week to you on RadioArian.com through the Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization podcast. So this week, let's talk a little bit about the fact that it was the anniversary of September the 11th, the 9/11 anniversary, which I will always remember in a little bit different way than most people, I guess, because obviously I have that infamous quote. Now, I was in the wee hours, a few hours after the second plane hit the Twin Towers, talking to, on the National Alliance email list, some people about it, and I made an offhand, now repeated, out of context quip about that Arabs are the kind of people that we don't want in our countries, and we don't want them marrying our daughters just like they don't want us marrying their daughters, and they don't want us in their countries. And we certainly don't think that we should interbreed with them or have them in our nation. But we also don't want to interfere in their nations. We don't want to be the bully boys for Israel. And what happened with 9/11 was largely a blowback against that. And I did not know when I made this quip that actually the 4,000 Jews who worked in the Twin Towers all called in sick that day and did not die. But what I said was basically kind of like Thomas Jefferson's bifurcated quote on the Jefferson Memorial, that the enemy of our enemy is our friend, and anyone who wants to fly a plane into a building to kill Jews is all right by me. And I've heard that quoted back to me a million times over the last 15 years since. Now, someone on that Stormfront email list, who was a political rival of mine in the organization and wanted my job as the deputy membership coordinator under Dr. Pierce for the National Alliance, reported that to the mainstream media and to the SPLC, and I was infamous because of that. But that would all happen and transpire later. What I remember from that day is the fact that September the 11th, 2001, was Dr. William Pierce's birthday. And so we actually had a cake made for him. And if you remember, if you were alive in that time, old enough to remember, you know, I actually heard the radio announcement on the way into work. I was driving from Arlington, West Virginia, into the National Office of the National Alliance and had the car radio news on, and they were talking about it. Then we got there, and we had like a library cart with a large screen TV on it playing the CNN news, and wheeled it into my office on the second floor, actually. Vic Gerhardt, who was Dr. Pierce's chief of staff at the time, brought it in there. We were all sitting around in my office on the second floor above Dr. Pierce's office at the National Alliance office building, watching the news coverage. You know, as things transpired, if you remember that day, it's pretty wild. But what I remember was, you know, the girls went to get the birthday cake that we had made at the local grocery store bakery. And as they brought it back, everyone in the community knew who we were. You know, we were the Nazis on the hill, right? They were shocked and appalled that we were getting this cake, thinking that somehow we had perhaps had advanced knowledge and were celebrating the 9/11 attacks instead of actually we were celebrating Dr. Pierce's birthday. And as he enjoyed his cake, he remarked that he really only needed two candles for his birthday that year, and he already got them.
I really have a hard time trying to reason with people who can remain calm when their government is murdering our kinsmen in another country wholesale. People get excited when a couple of nutcase teenagers in Colorado kill 13 of their classmates. They wring their hands and say, "Oh, isn't it just awful? What will we do about violence in our society?" But they remain calm when their government deliberately murders 7,000 or so. That's 7,000 of our kinsmen in Europe in order to make them obey the orders of a bunch of nutcase would-be commissars for the New World Order. It's big news for weeks when Timothy McVeigh blows up one building in Oklahoma City. But when our government, using our armed forces and our tax money, blows up dozens of buildings and kills hundreds of people every day in Serbia, the news is just ho-hum stuff. It's likely to be preempted by a basketball game. Maybe part of this lackadaisical attitude about the government's mass murder in Serbia is due to the feminization of American society and of the American male that I've complained about. Men's mental horizons have been contracted to the point where murder is real only when it happens next door. If it happens in another country, it isn't real. It's just something one sees on television. Or maybe some people just play too many video games. I guess that's the case with our military people. They don't seem to have any problem with killing people wholesale for no good reason when it's all done with smart weapons and video screens. You press a button, use a joystick to guide the bomb to its target, then boom, just like in a video arcade. That's not like having to get up close and stick a knife in your victim and listen to him scream or shoot him in the head and get splattered with his blood and brains. But you know, the latter way is really much better, at least from a moral standpoint. Because when a normal person, a moral person, has to kill another person up close, he needs a good reason for doing it. A better reason, anyway, than that's what he's paid to do. Too many of our military people have the attitude that they're just being paid to play an exciting video game when they guide their smart bombs to their targets. But in fact, they're being paid to murder the men, women, and children who are blown to bits by those bombs. And you know, it's not just the murder of Serbs that people should be concerned about. they should be concerned that it's their government committing the murders, not someone else's government that's none of their concern. We have a gang of homicidal maniacs running our country. People should be concerned about that.
There at morning, so he was in fine humor as well. And we had no idea, of course, if that would be Dr. Pierce's last birthday or any of the other events would transpire as the National Alliance, what happened with that. So won't go into that anymore. But that's my memory of September 11th. And then this year, the anniversary of it was really, I felt, muted, very quiet. Not at all a lot of patriotism. I feel like more and more people are understanding that this government is not anything to be patriotic about. And we still feel a queasiness when people burn the flag. We still stand up and we still sing the Pledge of Allegiance out and we do the Star-Spangled Banner. But, you know, we all understand, more and more Americans, especially white Americans, are understanding that this government is not our friend. It's a swamp that needs to be drained, literally and figuratively. And they no longer really feel confident that the narrative they've been told about 9/11 is accurate, is truthful. They no longer feel they can trust the government to have been honest with them about what transpired or even what's happening now. So it's hard for them to really get into the 9/11 anniversary beyond maybe honoring first responders, the police and the fire and EMT people on a local level, but that's about all they do anymore, really, you know? No one really cares to think about the Twin Towers because no one really feels confident that they know what even happened that day or who did it or why. So how could they feel patriotic and nostalgic about something that is kind of, to a large degree, thought of as being a myth? They can't, and so they did not. So this was a kind of surreal 9/11 anniversary, but I think it was really indicative of how things are going to be here on out as far as people's relationship with the federal government and with patriotism as it becomes more and more obvious that the national government, at least, is not our friend. It is, in fact, our adversary. Now, that having been said, you know, I remember the cake. I remember Dr. Pierce's birthday, and I always will think of those things when I think of 9/11 every time it comes around. Now, what is the current president doing? You know, DACA? Well, DACA is delayed action for the children of illegal immigrants, and that means that those who came here before they were 18, brought by their parents, or crossing by themselves in their own power, who are here illegally, will be basically given amnesty now. And I told you last week, 2 days before Trump announced it, that he was going to cuck on this, like he has on so many other things, and that people, we are not going to have a wall. He's going to maybe put up a couple more strands of barbed wire on pre-existing fences, he said. We're not going to have a wall. We're not going to have border security. What we're going to have is first amnesty for 800,000 DACA kids, the Dreamers, they call them. But in a reverse anchor baby way, that means 5.4 million illegal immigrant family members of theirs are not going to be deported. And because now they know that there's going to be this blanket amnesty for DACA kids, for illegals under the age of 18, thousands of them right now are flooding across our border from Mexico because they know it's going to happen. It's an invitation. So it's going to be probably more like 10 million, or at least 7, 8 million. We can't count them. We don't even know how many illegal immigrants there are in this country. The population is supposed to be 323 million. It may be 330 million counting illegal immigrants. It may be 335. Who knows? And it, kind of to paraphrase Hillary Clinton, at this point, what does it really matter, right? What we do know is that Trump has given Congress 6 months to give blanket amnesty to the DACA kids, to the Dreamers. And then that's going to lead into further amnesty. And look at what California is doing in response. The state of California, the People's Republic of California, have just declared themselves to be a sanctuary state. And folks, that is a huge, major signpost that I've told you to look for along the road to balkanization, civil war, and the breakup of America, because the federal government is being forced to abdicate its responsibility to secure the borders and its responsibility to determine who is a citizen and who is not, and who can vote and who cannot? Because Maryland is now allowing people in local elections who are illegal immigrants to vote. California won't be far behind. I mean, they already are, but they'll just admit it. So, when California declares itself a sanctuary state and the federal government does not stop it, then that's an abdication of power by the federal government, which will lead to people pushing further and further for more amnesty, more sanctuary, more open borders, and eventually they're going to lower that peppermint-striped flag and raise up that eagle and that snake, and it'll just be kind of a de facto motion at that point because it's already happened. It's already Mexico. It's already Aztlan. Once that happens, then, blacks can say, you know, for 400 years we were slaves and we suffered under Jim Crow and had to fight for our civil rights. And if Hispanics deserve their own nation, their own sovereignty, the right to manage their own affairs politically, then certainly we, even more than they, having suffered more than they have, deserve to have our own nation state and our own sovereignty and to control our own destiny as a people, probably with reparations to help us get a boost on the way out. And who can stop them? Will the federal government tell them no? Of course not. Of course not. They won't be able to if they want to. And that is what you call the breakup of America. That's what you call a divorce. That is balkanization. That's what we talk about here on Billy's Balkanization Podcast, The Rope Report, and on The Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Blog, which you can read at whitenationalist.com or at The Rope Report site, .wordpress.com. Now, as Trump has cucked and shown himself to be a traitor once again, as we see that the DACA kids and the Dreamer kids are going to get amnesty, and that's going to cost us probably about $150 billion in health care and education alone, as well as being the death knell for our nation, an invitation for more of them to come and to conquer the entire Southwest and border areas. We're also looking at things happening all over the country, radicalizing more and more white people. So much so that there was a recent poll that said 8% of Americans strongly identify with the white nationalist movement. 8%. That means that out of the 323 million Americans, there are 26 million white nationalists in the United States. I live in a state, Arkansas, with 3 million people. That means that between 8 and 9 states the size of my state, Arkansas, full of white nationalists are in the United States of America that are publicly willing to say so. Now, forget about the bandwagon effect and the threat and intimidation of political correctness and the way that most people, women of both gender, say what they think they're expected to say when they're asked a public poll question like that. If 8% of the U.S. population, obviously being whites, are willing to publicly say that they support white nationalism as a movement, 31%, according to the same poll, say that they agree with the statement that white people are under attack and that we need, as Americans, to preserve white European culture and heritage and our identity.
Down New Orleans, an old man sits beside me and says, tell me about your dream. I said, hey mister, I have a dream that I don't think that you like. You're easily offended, I suggest you take a hike. He said, son, how the hell it gets this way? What makes you feel, what makes you real, what makes you full of hate? I told him that I was tired, of all the left-wing lies. And being white power, man, it comes from something deep inside. We talked all about politics and about equal rights, and I looked deep down into his eyes and I'd seen that fire die. He fired straight back at me, son. I said, how'd it get so far? I said, listen, mister, it ain't my fault. I've been trying really hard. And he said, son, how the hell it get this way? What makes you feel? What makes you real? What makes you full of hate? I told him that I was tired of all the left-wing lies. And being white power, man, it comes from something deep inside. Attention to what this old guy looked like. He's dressed like 1860s and his skin was ghostly white. He wore an old gray jacket that bore the stars and bars. He said, trust me, son, I know how you feel. I've been down that road before. And he said, son, how the hell it get this way? What makes you feel? What makes you real? What makes you full of hate? I told him that I was tired of all the left-wing lies. And being white power, man, it comes from something deep inside. He said, keep up the good work, son, I'm sure that you'll go far. If you don't, the devil sure is gonna leave his mark. Finished up a whiskey and stepped onto the street. I said, hey, mister, thanks for the drinks. I didn't even catch your name. He crept into the fog and I just had to let him go. I knew right then and there that I didn't need to know. Then out the cold fog echoed more than I could see. The voice of Almighty himself said, you can call me General Lee. Son, man, I'm glad you feel this way. I'm glad you feel, I'm glad you're real, I'm glad you're full of hate. I told him that I was tired of all the left-wing lies. And being white power, man, it comes from something deep inside.
That means that if you take the 8%, 26 million of us are ready for New America. We're ready for the Balkanization. We're ready for a white nation, and that's why we already identify as white nationalists. And we can thank the mainstream Jewish-controlled media for making white nationalism such an openly accepted and commonly understood term. What does it mean to be a white nationalist? It means that you want a white nation. It's no more complicated than that. We're not bogged down in whether we are alt-right or white nationalist 1.0. We're not bogged down or concerned with arguing about whether we're national socialist or libertarian or believe we should return back to the Constitution. We're not concerned with what our personal religious views may be. If I'm a Christian identist or if the person sitting next to me is an Odinist or a creator or an agnostic or an atheist, we're only concerned about the fact that In order to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, we have to have a white nation, and therefore we are 26 million strong and growing, identifying as white nationalist, because we are demanding a white nation. 8%, 26 million. And I've told you before on this program that in April of 1775, when that shot was fired that was heard around the world on Lexington Green in Massachusetts, 3% of the American colonists wanted independence from Great Britain. We now have three times that many who want to have a white nation. They're not trying to vote their way out. They don't have any faith in the electoral process or in Donald Trump or in the Republican Party. They recognize that we're not going to vote our way out of the situation, and they know that we need a white nation as the only solution to the survival of our people. They've left patriotism behind. They're no longer flaggers. They've graduated. They've radicalized past that, largely due to efforts of people like you and me, radicalizing them, pulling them along, shifting that Overton window to the right, as that Hegelian dialectic gets kicked on down the road towards National Socialism, towards white nationalism, towards racialism, unabashed, unintimidated, unafraid of being called a racist or a hater or a Nazi who wants to kill 6 billion Jews. It doesn't matter anymore. They're powerless against us, and they know that. They see our ranks swelling. They see 26 million Americans openly identifying and supporting white nationalism as a movement, 8% of the population higher than ever before, literally calling themselves white nationalists. And it scares, pardon my French, it scares the shit out of them. They know what's coming. They understand better than many of us do what that means for them. When I say they and them, I'm talking about primarily the Jews and their liberal shabelskoy. They know what's coming. Because even if we've forgotten, they've got a long memory. Let's say never forget. They mean never forget. Except that this time, all the myths about lampshades and bars of soap and conveyor belts and colored smoke, all these laughable things that people go to prison for laughing at, it's going to seem like a tea party. You know, it's going to seem like a birthday cake on 9/11 compared to the Twin Towers. What they're going to get. All they've done is given us some really good ideas for when we finish the job. So, over this next week, I want you to think seriously about getting involved locally on a grassroots level with people in your community who think like you do. If you contact the Showall Network, we will help you find them and meet them and to cherry pick them and to radicalize them, to fill them out, so that you can build your own Showall Network franchise in your community and become a person of influence there, preparing for what is coming. So that when the stuff hits the fan, when the internet is no more, you will have people in place that you can count on, that you can trust as white nationalist friends and brothers and sisters who will help you stand to retake your community, to be those voices saying, no, don't let in the urban refugees. We're going to stand up and take care of our own again. And you can email me, roper_billy@yahoo.com, or go to the Showall Network website at theshieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com to find out more about how you can get involved in the Showall Network. And this next weekend, after we have our meeting in beautiful, scenic, downtown, crime-free Central Arkansas of the Central Showall Network, I'll be giving you a report about what's going to be, based on people who've already confirmed their attendance, the largest ever Showall Network meeting. And then the weekend after, when we attend the Stormfront Conference with David Duke and Don Black and other white nationalist leaders in Eastern Tennessee, then I'll be giving you a report of that conference and the Smoky Mountain Summit there. Then, 3 weeks from now, I will tell you about the Oktoberfest, October the 7th, in Eastern Arkansas. So, I am a very busy boy. But that is because we don't have a lot of time, folks. It's getting real, and it's getting real soon. So I hope that you will join me in putting your boots on the ground, getting out from behind your keyboard, meeting people, making those contacts, making those connections, building your local network now before it is too late. Because honestly, like the scripture says, no man knows the day or the hour. It will come like a thief in the night. We want to be ready. We want you to be ready to stand with us and to take back a good chunk of this country for our people so that we can, when the balkanization comes, be ready to defend that territory and to, from the ashes, bring forth our new America. Once again, for the Shield Wall Network and RadioArian.com, this is Billy Roper and The Roper Report, reminding you, as always, to think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Will you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fire rocks out to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll send a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.